Well, welcome back to Detroit. It's great to have Ron Fournier.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
With Cranes, the publisher, and doing great things in Detroit.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about coming back.
Greatest decision I've made since I married my wife. The two of us, Lori and I, met at University of Detroit, and we couldn't find jobs coming out of school in 85, the only in Michigan. Right. Mm-hmm. I'd worked for free for just about every newspaper in and around Detroit when I was in middle school, high school, and college. And when I came out of college, they realized they had to pay me. They didn't want my services anymore. So long story short, Neil Schein, the great columnist and editor and publisher of the Detroit Free Press, was a professor at University of Detroit, and in whose class I met my wife. When he told me he didn't think he'd be able to hire me at the Free Press because I wasn't ready, I took a job in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and found myself a couple years later covering Bill Clinton as governor, and found myself 7 years later at the White House, and been basically chasing a great career. It was a great experience working in Washington and covering the White House and national politics. But the whole time, my wife and I, we'd come back here every couple months and be like, okay, when are we coming home next? Mm-hmm. Detroit was always home. And finally, as we got our kids raised, literally the last one graduated from high school last June. As we saw his graduation coming in 2014, my wife and I decided when he graduates in 16, we're going to move back. I didn't know what I would do. I was prepared to cut lawns in Crow's Point again. But we were determined to come back for personal reasons, to be back in this great state, to be back with our families. And then stumbling into the Cranes job has been a great side benefit. But the truly great thing about this has been being back with our families and being part of the part of this state and part of what I hope will be a resurgence in Detroit.
I just finished a 5-year stint on the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee, and describing Detroit to individuals that aren't familiar with it has been a challenge, but I think it's getting much easier. How do you go about talking about Detroit with folks that maybe haven't experienced it in recent times?
It's the same as I've always done it. What's been different now is the reaction. For the first 25 years away, I'd say I'm from Detroit because I wear it on my sleeve.
Right.
I just love Detroit.
Love Detroit.
The grittiness of it, what a middle-class family could do in Detroit, you know, all the things that we love about it, especially people coming from my background. I don't think it was the same for people who didn't look like me, but certainly people who you know, I was a son of a cop, a white family in the northeast side of Detroit. You know, I knew there's a way I could make my way in this world. So you'd say you're from Detroit, and they, oh, yeah, really? You're from Detroit? You must be pretty tough. No, not pretty tough. Let me tell you really about Detroit. The last 5 years, it's been, yeah, I'm from Detroit. You're thinking of moving back. You're from Detroit. Tell me about Detroit. I hear some really cool things about it.
Exactly.
So to me, Detroit's never been as bad as people thought it was. Mm-hmm. And Detroit's not as great as some people think it is now. You're mistaken if you think Detroit's coming all the way back. Mm-hmm. You're mistaken if you think there's been a resurgence. You're mistaken if you think that everyone is benefiting from what is happening so dramatically and brilliantly downtown in Midtown. So I see Detroit the way I always have. Cup is half full and cup is half empty. Sure. It's interesting how the rest of the world now is now looking at Detroit differently. That's an opportunity.
I would say, to go back to your earlier comment, that my personal guess is that Mary had her eye on you for a while, because I know you've always come back and had conversations. And
Mary Kramer.
Yeah, an extraordinary career as an award-winning journalist. And I know she spots Detroit-based talent no matter where it is in the country. And that's been one of her enormous personal strengths. I think that's reflected in the Detroit homecoming idea.
Literally through homecoming.
Yeah.
Mary Kramer, you're talking about,
the
former editor and publisher and still my colleague, even though she's handed over the reins to me. She's remarkable, and it literally was homecoming. So we decided, like I said, in 2014, we're coming home in 16. I had to figure out what I was going to do. One of the first things I did was got myself invited to homecoming, and I came here for the first two, networking like crazy, and I kept bumping into Mary Kramer, and she'd follow up and side up to me and give me some story ideas, and I didn't realize that she was checking me out.
It was a sort of an inbox interview.
It was, and I didn't realize it. And she's the one who brought me into Casey Crane, and the two of them said, "You're coming home. You miles will be home. You miles will work for Cranes. Here's what we would like to do. We would like to do a succession." Mary was looking to move on to other things and take on other challenges. And she offered to be my mentor, teach me how to do this job, and she still is. It's been remarkable. So I am in homecoming vernacular, Detroit homecoming. I'm one of the 300 or so expats who came back every year. I am an ex-expat.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to this year to be part of homecoming instead of being one of the guests.
Mary's brainchild, and there are some other people, you know, who are often behind the scenes and not often in the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
Who really believed it was time for us collectively to reach out.
Yeah.
And to do, I think, you know, your comment, glass half full, glass half empty, to be genuine and authentic about where we were as a state, right, where we were as Detroit, and have people come back and help us think through how to make it better. Well, and that was really, from my sense, being at the first one, the spirit of it all. And it was really interesting for me who came back, you know, and including people without family connections,
mm-hmm.
who just grew up and their families went someplace else.
Right.
But there was this drawback to being part of making something better.
There's something about Michigan that people can't get it out of their blood. We come back to the state. There's something about Detroit now. You see great possibility, and it's a magnet. And Mary has recognized that, and what she's done with homecoming, not only bringing people back, but making sure that, hey, if you want to come back again, you better leave something behind. You better take part in what's going on here. And it's not, as you're suggesting, it's not glossed over. It's a very authentic, here's really what's going on in Detroit, the best and the worst. This year, her plans for it are amazing. It's going to be in September again.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to have it out in the neighborhoods this time, mm-hmm. something I'm a big champion of, where the expats, the people who grew up in Detroit but moved away, will be now immersed in some of these neighborhoods that are on the edge of coming back, that need the help that expats can. And I think it's going to be a really big, big attraction.
I was on the Innovation Task Force that Nancy Schertzing and Dave Eger did, and so had an opportunity to meet and talk with people about, you know, how we think about not only innovation zones, but how we think about being much more inclusive about what being a Detroiter means.
Mm.
And so I think Mary was very much in this homecoming is very much in the spirit of that.
What do you mean be more inclusive about what Detroit means? What's your thinking behind that?
Because I think that there was a real sense, you know, that Detroit was being defined externally as the shininess of the development downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And three blocks off,
right,
it's the conversation you're having now about Detroiters in general and how everyone who's in Detroit can benefit from these much more directly, much more, and feeling some confidence that all of this energy and passion isn't just going to stop when a part of the city is brought back.
And for a business media company, now for a new business journalist, I'm really fascinated by what we can learn from these mainly small, durable, mostly minority-owned businesses in the neighborhoods outside of downtown and midtown that have weathered a huge recession in 2008. Bankruptcy, now gentrification.
Right.
A company that's come through those three things and has lasted 10, 15, 20, 25 years, whether it's a barbershop on Van Dyke or a tool and die on 8 Mile Road, what can all of business, what could Dan Gilbert learn from a company that has hung around that long? What could my readers learn? So we're trying to broaden our landscape even as a business publication.
I think that's really important. It's really just the next phase of development.
Mm-hmm.
In
right.
some ways, that Cranes, from my perspective, with Mary, became the authentic, genuine news source for people who were looking for business opportunities, large and small.
Mm-hmm.
And people read it all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a Michigan, even though people sometimes think of that, it wasn't a Michigan publication in the business community.
Especially with the internet now, it's fascinating to see our traffic coming far outside of Southeast Detroit.
So it became, I think, an important vehicle for talking about the new Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And now it becomes a really important vehicle for talking about all the stories of Detroit and the resiliency, the enormous resiliency of these small business owners particularly.
Yeah, I accept the challenge.
Yeah, but then you have, I think, bigger companies I would pick American Axle as one. Mm-hmm. It really is worrying about not just their company expansion, but what happens in the neighborhood, right. which is a very different neighborhood than downtown.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of just popping up of growth that will come together, but is still pretty erratic and edgy.
I think more and more businesses, this is something we're focusing on, are starting to realize or have realized that their number one problem is talent. Mm-hmm. Well, if your number one problem is talent, then one of your number one concerns should be, for example, the fate of the public and charter school system in and around Detroit. Mm-hmm. If your community is not producing well-educated, well-trained people, that's affecting your bottom line. So there is an ROI for investment in education, mm-hmm. both in dollars and sweat equity.
Mm-hmm. What role the sporting business has really had an impact in downtown Detroit? Mm-hmm. You've got Tom Gores, who made the decision to bring the Pistons down. Of course, Mr. Ilitch, the Tigers and the Wings. There's talk about soccer being dropped in there. Sport is sport, but from a business perspective, what do you see the impact there, and any advice on where that should go in the future for Detroit?
Well, it's a big enough of a business that with us only having coverage of 7 beats in our publication, one of them is the business of sports. Mm-hmm. And it's something Mary established quite a while ago. And boy, we're perfectly positioned to really capture this zeitgeist where, first, socially and culturally, we're the only city in the country that will have all 4 of its major sports teams within walking
right
distance,
downtown.
Right downtown. In Philly, they're kind of on the edge. And there's a huge economic impact on restaurants and bars and everything bubbling up to advertising and marketing. And there's a huge impact on the economy of having vibrant sports franchises downtown, not just in branding of the city, but in literal dollars and cents. So it's something we pay a lot of attention to.
Having walked through the facility with Tom Wilson, it's interesting to hear their vision, and the vision really goes way beyond the two sports teams that are there. It's what they want to do for the communities and where they want to go,
right?
Who they want to bring in.
Right. So now part of that is PR, but part of it is serious corporate responsibility where they do recognize that it's not even just PR and it's not even just charity work. Mm-hmm. It's just bottom line recognition that as the community around those arenas strengthen and as the neighborhoods strengthen, that's more customers who can put butts in the seats.
Right.
So it's both the right thing to do and the smart thing to do to be a business person today, thinking beyond your four walls. And certainly Gores gets this, the Ilitches get this, Gilbert gets this.
Yep.
And it's pretty exciting to watch. Now, you know, then you have the tough questions. They're getting a lot of tax money, a lot of tax incentives to build those arenas. Does Tom Gores really need $400 million when, you know, that's pretty much, you know, he'll spend almost that much on a house. And those are hard questions that we're willing to ask at Cranes. Sure, we want the business community to thrive. But we're also going to ask, you know, is the business community acting in the right way and ask those tough questions and answer when we can.
Well, I think that you used the phrase corporate responsibility and how that gets balanced on bottom line decisions. And what decisions are made that are corporate responsibility that might negatively affect the bottom line, and what the corporate decisions are made that are just a derivative of a bigger bottom line.
Right.
And I think Cranes has done a good job of trying to think through the difference between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still make money. So this is not about not making money
right.
in either one.
Right.
But it's where the shading comes
right.
With respect to the purposes of that.
Yeah, it's business can't become like politics, my old business, where everything's zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
We have to realize that the power is not in the blacks and the whites, but in the grays. So I had a really interesting conversation with Matt Elliott yesterday, the Michigan president of Bank of America, and he's talking about their really serious and authentic corporate responsibility mission and how it's affects their bottom line for all the reasons we're talking about it. But then he acknowledged sometimes that comes into conflict with the rest of their mission, which is making the right loans at the right time, the right places, and have to serve, you know, you don't want to be, to serve your customers, you don't want to be giving out bad loans because you're lending your customers money while you're also, you know. So how you balance, there's times when it comes into conflict. And I asked him, you know, how do you deal with that? He said, one thing was by being transparent. is by letting the community, letting us, starting with my employees, know why we're making these decisions and how they fit into our broader value metrics. Mm-hmm. But more and more you're seeing businesses including corporate responsibility and improving the community as part of their central values for very good reasons. Again, not just for goodwill.
Right. I think one of the things that as the Detroit Homecoming evolves is who gets to speak for what people want. And where's the role? I mean, we're as a land grant, we've got we've had 40 people in Detroit full time in that area forever. We're going to celebrate our 100th anniversary in Detroit in October.
Wow, that's great. Okay.
And we're very much, you'll see a little bit of an office on Woodward, and I bought that space. We bought that space in the depth of the downturn, more symbolically than anything else. It's turned into be a pretty good financial investment, I would say, but it wasn't planned at the time to be that because we really are working very much in the neighborhoods without a lot of MSU signs, and the question of sort of who gets to speak about what that means, and where the voices are and who organizes those voices is, I think, really the tension that's going to evolve between the corporate and the political process.
And to your point, it will bubble down to something like our homecoming event.
Yeah.
Who's allowed to come to the events?
Yeah.
Is the community really integrated into the events? And who's speaking for the community? Is it people from outside or folks like me who aren't, I'm not living in the community?
Yeah.
Am I the only one who's going to be able to represent folks who are living in the Fitzgerald neighborhood or Live 6 over by my alma mater, University of Detroit? Or will we in homecoming and companies and institutions like yours actually allow the members of those communities to speak and have real power? You're right. That's the big test of the next 10, 20 years.
And so I think one of the things for me is that as more and more folks like us get into the community and offer a program because there's a demand for an MBA program or whatever that is, we're thinking about, the role that Extension plays in all these communities.
Wow.
That have been there because the projects in Community A differ from the projects in Community B.
So how do you do that without looking patronizing or close-minded, and paternalistic?
I think, part of it is just time and being there over time.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it, there's always that risk. And so you just have to always guard against it. Because we do have cutting-edge knowledge. It's one of the reasons we backed away from some of the early urban farm issues because they became too much that.
Too much what?
Paternalistic.
How so?
By viewing, the neighbors began to provide feedback that it looked, in their view, more like a plantation of old.
Wow. See, I would never have thought of that, but that makes sense.
And And it wasn't the people we were partnering with weren't doing good. I'm not, and they haven't done good.
Right.
But we just didn't want to be a part of that, so we backed away from it. So, we're going to be opening an urban food system section in the Brightmoor neighborhood in the fall.
Can you describe that for me?
It's going to be a place where people learn about we'll provide cutting edge knowledge, which we do through the experiment station. And connecting that to community so it becomes a demonstration site. And the agenda will be determined by what we see in the communities in terms of some of the urban food issues.
So how do you think that is going to work out better than the urban farming did?
Because there'll be a community advisory committee that figures that out.
You let them tell you how to use your cutting-edge knowledge?
Yeah.
Fascinating. That's a good lesson for me, too.
So, but we'll see how it works. I mean, this is going to be, because everything changes around you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Detroit is very different today than it was when you came back for homecoming, and I did the first homecoming 3 years from now.
Yeah, it sure is.
3 years ago.
Right.
It'll be different 3 years from now.
Knock on wood.
It will.
And better,
It will be, and hopefully it will be better, different. Mm-hmm. And it is a very complex city.
Mm-hmm. Always has been.
It always has been, and it's one of its greatest strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Has been that diversity, that complexity, that energy, but the combination of grit across all of that has pretty much been the same.
Right.
Resilience. They're characteristics of a Detroiter, no matter what you might look like, they're very, very similar.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And we just need to build on those and learn and grow. And we're going to make mistakes, and we'll just fix them.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Amen.
What I mean. But it's all about, you know, I think making this the centerpiece, not just for a renewed Detroit, but for a new America.
Amen. I do believe that that the big existential issues that have caused a decline in America, at least our faith in our institutions, started first and were exacerbated in Detroit. And the things that we could do to bring Detroit a new rebirth, mm-hmm. The healing of those institutions and the recreating and the building of new institutions could be a model for the rest of the country, mm-hmm. don't you think?
I do.
I mean, if we can bring back Detroit in a way that elevates everybody and not mm-hmm. just some, that could be a model for the rest of the country.
No, I agree.
But as Mayor Duggan said, if we fail this time, we might not get another chance.
Right.
Yep. Well, and that's why I think it's a collective part of, I think, what you all are doing, Cranes is doing, now that you're responsible for this, you and Mary are doing, is really setting up, by going to the neighborhoods, the new definition of the responsibility of what constitutes success.
I do think you come back. We talked off air before we started about purpose, and you know, I have a son that lives in the heart of Detroit, and his friends, and their purpose is beyond their career. Their purpose is the city, mm-hmm. and it's yeah. exciting to have people that are in that mid late 20s yep. to have that purpose.
Well, my oldest daughter was raised in Arlington, Virginia, a wealthy suburb outside of Washington, D.C., and when she graduated from college, a good public school in Virginia, she was looking for something to do, so she signed on for the City Year program, one of the AmeriCorps programs, mm-hmm. was placed in Detroit, a place mm-hmm. that she'd gone to visit her grandparents but didn't know much about, fell in love with the city, fell in love with a local guy, mm-hmm. Is now living in Midtown, mm-hmm. Detroit, adopted a foster child from the Detroit public school system, is working yeah. for the Archdiocese of Detroit. She has found purpose
right.
Beyond herself, beyond her job, beyond her career, by living in Detroit. She got here 7 years before we did,
mm-hmm. right.
because of what the city is about, not because she was born and raised here,
yeah.
But because of the city has a special draw, I think, especially for the millennial generation.
It does.
Who are more purpose-driven than our generation was.
It really does.
Yeah, I think that lots of exciting things happening, and we're going to truly value your voice as you guide Cranes.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. I hope I'm worthy of that.
Well, I see you have your autism wristband
yes.
on, so if you'd like to make a small pit, you may.
I'm on the board of the Autism Alliance of Michigan, which, among many things, has a great program with an email or a phone call. You can get a navigator on the phone who'll help you figure out exactly what you need from the growing autism support system in the state that began with Lieutenant Governor Calley and the Autism Alliance getting insurance reform passed yeah. in the state. My youngest child, I'm sorry, and my only son, Tyler, has what used to be called Asperger's syndrome. He's high-functioning autistic. This is something very important to my wife and I personally, and it's something I've already been able to get myself dug into and a feeling I have a little bit more purpose in my life mm-hmm. here in Michigan than I did in Washington.
Well, it's also something that Michigan State has a pretty significant investment, as you know, from Lieutenant Governor
yeah,
Calley,
yeah.
beyond the insurance, and something that, to brag a moment, this is what we put together. We began with an alliance with Irish universities on the question of autism and the Daughters of Charity.
Really?
And we put together a pretty significant alliance there to think about cutting-edge knowledge and how we think about that as it relates to not just adaptive devices but policy questions.
Hmm.
So we've got a group of about 70 researchers who meet regularly
wow.
to think about all aspects of the autistic neurodevelopmental spectrum without giving it a label.
Right.
From people in the College of Medicine to basic scientists to people in education, folks who do early child development. We're trying a whole range of new techniques through our own child development laboratory because we have a capacity to test them out, particularly early childhood issues. And the College of Music has been actively engaged, so I will send you a video
Please
that
do.
Should inspire you. We've done this music experience for a variety of students who are on the autism spectrum, who are very talented in music. And they're not simply autistic. They're students with other sets of characteristics. Mm-hmm. And they did their concert last Sunday. They come for a week. Mm-hmm. They're taught by graduate students. And then we do other activities with them that we think have some very positive impact. And then they do a concert. And they do a four-handed piece with their mentor.
Wow.
And they do an individual piece of their own choosing. And I think you'd find
it. Can you
send
me that?
I'll send you the video. If you'll send me your email, I'll send you the video.
And I'll send you a link of one of my son's attributes is comedy.
Okay.
And he was interviewed by Frank Beckman at the Autism Alliance, Alliance's gala last April.
Okay.
And it's one of the funniest, most charming things you'd ever want to see. And it's on my, if anybody wants to see it on my Twitter feed, Ron at Fournier. It's the one I have pinned on my. It's just the most endearing thing you'd ever want to see.
Okay, I would be delighted to see it because we're looking at ways at which we can bring artistic expression in variety of forms into part of this to really showcase the enormous talents that people have who are in this spectrum who that may be disguised because of the way in which we view some other behaviors.
They have, over history, they've people on the spectrum have brought some of the greatest scientific and cultural breakthroughs that would be impossible if they're neurotypical. Mm-hmm. And today, you know, as you know, one of the big callings of the Autism Alliance is trying to convince employers that there's a lot of jobs out there that would be better fit by these people with autism. You might have to give them a few accommodations, but don't you have to give any employee to nowadays accommodations?
Yeah.
There's some skills that we're leaving on the table and attributes that we're leaving on the table because of the biases and misunderstandings and ignorance.
Because of Lieutenant Governor Kelly being a Spartan and because of some of the things we're doing, we've run an internship program for high school students who are on the spectrum to come and work with us. It was small with 10 students, in part because people are uncomfortable. People who run programs are uncomfortable with giving folks as much freedom as they would have if they came to work for us, I guess is a way to describe it. So one of the pictures I have on my desk is a note of a young woman who worked at Kellogg Center. She's one of the people I checked on because I'm over there. So she's graduating from our program and is looking, you know, for employment. And she sent me a picture. So I have it on my desk as a reminder that we're doing a lot of things that are very different than what people think about as a university, and we should be continuing to do that.
Well, good for you. Well, Tyler is enrolling in Macomb County Community College, starts in a couple of weeks, his first courses in college. He wants to go away to school in a couple of years, you'll have to make a pitch here.
I'll make a pitch.
Eastern Michigan's trying hard, too. You know, they got a great program as well.
Well, I think we could put you might want to talk to Dan about how good our program is. I'll just say that.
I'm sure it's great, and we'll get Tyler up here.
Well, I'll let Dan talk about that program.
And you know, his sister, my middle daughter, has just graduated from Michigan State Law School. So she'll be pushing him hard to be a Spartan.
That's all good. But we'll get you up here. So one of the things I'd like to do, we'll send you some information, but. Because I'll see you at the homecoming. Mary wants me to introduce Graymon. So
great.
So I'll see you at the homecoming, and I find that to be just an extraordinary experience.
I look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, but we'll get you up at maybe even to teach a journalism class for us and talk about media and other things. So along the way, and how we think about targeted media as a way of. Bringing light to things that are important because that targeted media is an authentic voice, and you all have clearly done that with Mary's leadership, and I'm sure that you'll do it as well. So we look forward to working with you.
Look forward to working with you.